again time for the New American Dream Radio Show, the American Russian novel All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour. We have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, a tortured tundra.
What we must have is a new American dream. We are allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. A new American dream. Not of homes and toasters, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. The new America, the real hope of the world.
Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink. And listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
There is a house in New Orleans, you call the rising sun. It's been the ruin of many a poor soul, and me, oh God, I'm one. If I'd listened what Mama said, I'd be at home today. Being so young and foolish, poor boy, I let a gambler lead me astray. My mother, she's a tailor, sews those new blue jeans. My sweetheart, he's a drunkard, Lord God, he drinks down in New Orleans. He fills his glasses to the brim and passes them around. The only pleasure he gets out of life is a hobone from town to town. The only thing a drunkard needs is a suitcase and a trunk. The only time that he's half satisfied is when he's on a drunk. Go and tell my baby sister, never do like I've done. Shun that house down in New Orleans that they call that rising sun. It's 1 foot on the platform, 1 foot on the train. I'm going back down to New Orleans to wear my ball and chain. My life is almost over, my race is almost run. I'm going back down to New Orleans, to that house of the rising sun. Tonight, I'm broadcasting from Haines City, Florida, from the home of some of my best friends. Rod suggested this song, but I picked out the Woody Guthrie lyrics instead of the more famous Animals version. Interestingly enough, House of the Rising Sun has a history going back to the 19th century. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we're streaming live from Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio, so we hope you'll head over to freedomslips.com and make a donation to keep all their great shows on the air, and well, make sure you mention the New American Dream Radio Show when you do that. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Frank Cordero, Julius Awafong, Karen Kitkowski, Michael Annis, and Phil Ferruggio. And so tonight we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Des Moines, in northern Minnesota, in Fort Lauderdale, Mount Jackson, Yaoundé, Cameroon, Denver, Port Orange, Des Moines, and wherever you are. This should be read before every CNN, Fox, NPR, ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS broadcast. We're an empire now, and when we act, we create our own reality, and while you're studying that reality, judiciously as you will, we'll act again, creating other new realities, which you can study too, and that's how things will sort out. We're history's actors, and you, all of you, will be left to just study what we do. Karl Rove, Operation Gladio, Operation Northwoods, 9/11, Boston, Sandy Hook, Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, Dallas, San Bernardino, etc., etc., etc. My recommended list for this week, number one, is My Fellow Americans, We Are Fools by Margot Kidder. Find it at jamesfetzer.blogspot.com. Also, I recommend the tweets of Andrei Vilcek. Understand the world through Andrei Vilcek if you can't travel around the world. Twitter.com/AndreiVilcek, VLTCHEK. I also recommend Truth Stream Media on YouTube. Their latest is entitled What the CIA Does. I also recommend Jill Stein, YouTube. Jill Stein for President Booster Club, The Movement for Open Debates. Jill Stein visit to Portland, Maine. Jill Stein speech at First Church of Northampton. Jill Stein speech at Rutgers and more. Jill Stein videos on YouTube. About a month after I was elected governor, I was requested into the basement of the Capitol to be interviewed by 23 members of the Central Intelligence Agency. They put me in a chair and they were in a big half moon around me. You know what the most bizarre thing about it was? There was every array of people you could imagine, young people, old people, all nationalities. That's what really got to me. These were people you would see every day. They look like your neighbors. Jesse Ventura. Well, welcome to Sugar Creek. Welcome to Sugar Creek by CWG Press is my latest novel. It's now available at createspace.com, also Amazon. Welcome to Sugar Creek. We already know you're here.
Good evening, everybody. And now, let's welcome tonight's contestants and play America in Jeopardy. Tonight's categories. Hillary Clinton is dead. Hillary body double number one. Hillary body double number two. And our final America in Jeopardy category. Hillary Clinton is president. And now, the New American Dream Real History Channel, sponsored by Artifact Ripped Up Jeans. They really look really, really old. We continue with letters from Father Larry Rosebaugh from El Salvador, 1986. In my first letter to you, I took some time explaining how I got to El Salvador, how my past year in Mexico helped prepare the way for the work to be done here. Many in positions of authority have a way of devaluing the life and person of the poor, characterizing the oppressed as lazy, criminal, without intellectual capacity or the desire to work. We who live among the marginalized must be the voice for our friends whose right to express themselves is denied them. If I can share the portion of the life of friends here, these letters to you will have fulfilled their purpose. Benjamin is a man, 57 years of age, whose hair is black without any sign of graying. He's worked in the campo since he was 7. This is more the custom than the exception, as the knowledge of the land and how to tend it is one's means of survival. The Campesino family rises at 4 in the morning or earlier. The fire is started, coffee readied. Tortillas are put over the hot coals, and tamales containing corn and sugar or a sample of meat are also on hand. And finally, breakfast is served. The land that Benjamin and other campesinos work is on the hillside, very rocky, generally dry. Only one who has been born on this land could till it with any measure of success. Within 3 weeks after sowing the seeds, the hillside will be green with sturdy, small stalks of corn. We see a sort of mutual commitment to each other. In the mornings, I try to work in the fields with him, and he keeps close by to respond to the needs of the parish, which are many. Benjamin, as other campesinos, is a person with tremendous energy and physical strength. His disciplined life has hewed him into a person of faith and vision, accompanied by an endurance to live with a multitude of obstacles and hardships. The news received each day is a burden, often harder to swallow than the climb up the hillside or the hot sun of the campo. That the war continues is a fact. That the goal of the government and armed forces is to gain a military victory is bitter news. Bitter, even more so when it is known that it is the U.S. that influences and controls all decisions made here in El Salvador. The government armed forces have had control of our town for over a year. 100 or so soldiers live here and guard the city on all sides. A few weeks ago, a battalion arrived from the conflict area of Morazan. About 250 soldiers camped out in the park across from the church, with their heavy artillery and all. Unknown to the people, their unpublished goal was to initiate this program of United to Rebuild. The colonel of the battalion called the entire population to an open demonstration. Each family was visited by two soldiers, extending a personal invitation to attend this open meeting. Such an invitation necessitates a positive response. So the plaza was filled with over 400 people attending. Interestingly enough, we at the parish were not invited. The colonel opened and closed the meeting over 2.5 hours in all. We are here to celebrate the birth of Christ, which is a family celebration. We represent the forces that are working for peace and the human rights of all Salvadorans. We closed down the House of Prostitution last night, as it is a scandal and source of defamation in your community. For the good of all concerned, we will begin to arrest those here and in the countryside who are subversives and attached to the communist plot to destroy and rule in El Salvador. We want to work with the padres and the church, as I too am a Catholic and devout Christian. At the very time the colonel was speaking these eloquent words, arrests were in process. Three men from this town and 12 campesinos from the nearby villages were arrested. Enough arrests to put the people on edge and attain the attention and cooperation desired. In the last 3 weeks, the programs to repair the roads and pick up the garbage have begun. The children have been given several parties. The soldiers have handed out candy during the holidays while the war goes on. While homes are destroyed, lives lost by the bombing of villages in Chalatenango and Morazan. Promoting peace, preaching the gospel, and seeking a military victory, all in the same breath. Quite a Christmas package. What does this say to us? We're walking a delicate line. What we say and do must take into account the effects it will have on our Salvadoran sisters and brothers. At the same time, this public expression of control over mind and body deepens our commitment, though it may mean a toned-down outer approach. The intense inner search continues. That was by Larry Rosebaugh, Father Larry Rosebaugh, an OMI priest from Wisconsin who spent many years working with poor in Central America, also many years in America's prisons for fighting the U.S. military. He was murdered by a gunman in Guatemala in 2009. This has been the New American Dream Real History Channel, sponsored by Artifact Ripped Up Jeans. They're really cool because they really look really, really old, but they're not. Not really.
Our first guest of the evening is Julius Awafong. Julius Awafong passes this note on about his tonight's show. My show is about the post-electoral conflict presently going on in Gabon, a border country to Cameroon. This violence is a result of a supposedly rigged presidential election that took place on August 27th. You can present me as a political science research student researching on political parties and in political conflicts with much emphasis on sub-Saharan Africa. Thanks, Julius. And now, Julius Awafong.
Hello, Chuck. Hello, Mike. Good evening. Good evening to our listeners. I wanted to talk about how Cameroonians perceive or how they place their judgment on the American elections, as it is very controversial today, especially with the first female presidential hopeful, Hillary Clinton, and the very controversial Donald J. Trump. But I sent out a list of questionnaires, and the results haven't reached me yet. So I've decided to place my show for this month on the recent elections that took place in Gabon this 27th of August 2016, and the post-electoral violence or post-electoral conflict that is ongoing now. Gabon is a small country with a population of about 2 million inhabitants, and this country borders Cameroon to the south. Or it shares border shares its border with Cameroon to the south. In about half a century or more, this country has experienced three presidents, and it visibly portrayed an image of stability up to what we're seeing today. A family, the Bongo family, is well known for presiding over this state for about more than 50 years now, or almost 50 years now, beginning with Omar Bongo, who was the father of the current president, Ali Bongo. After the demise of Ali Bongo in 2009, his son, Ali Bongo, took over his father through an anticipated election, which was highly disputed and was claimed that he lost but was put in place by France, which seems to be maintaining a strong and hand, which France that seems to be maintaining a strong hand of control over its former colonies, including Gabon. Now let's talk about a timeline in the presidential and political history of Gabon. Let's start with this with what happened on the 17th of August 1960. On the 17th of August 1960, Mr. Liongba, who was the first black male of Libreville, that's the capital of Gabon, and he was called the first black mayor because before then, most mayors were white. You know, Gabon was colonized by France, and most decisions that were taken in Gabon before independence were carried out by the French people, that is the white. So Liongba was the first mayor of France and was appointed the first prime minister by the colonial administration, that is the French administration, after independence. In fact, Liongba declared independence after he was made the first prime minister of Gabon by the colonial administration. So after this independence, the duties of the president of the republic were assured by the French government. That should be reiterated. So on the 15th of November 1960, the National Assembly of Gabon sanctioned the government of Liongba. In fact, some people rose to contest the decisions of Liongba to change Gabon into a presidential system or a presidential regime. And one of the major contestants were Marie Gonjo or Paul Marie Gonjo. And it should be highlighted that Paul Marie Gonjo, a member of the National Assembly, who contested the presidential system being put in place by Liongba, who was put in place by France, was a former member of the National Assembly of France in the 1950s, that is before independence. This means before independence, we must also highlight, Gabon was run as a French territory, as a province or a region of France, even though it is found in Africa. That is to tell you how colonial administration really dealt with us, or the former colonial masters dealt with some African or African countries. So by contesting this presidential regime, Paul Marie Gonjo preferred a parliamentary regime, and he was supported in this fight by the main political rival to Liongba, who was called Jean-Hilaire Obame. He was a political rival. Remember, Paul Marie was not a political rival. He was just a member of the National Assembly. On the following day, Liongba, who was the prime minister, who was put in place by France, decreed a state of emergency and ordered the arrest of parliamentarians who were behind those who demanded the parliamentary regime, as well as Gonjo himself, were all arrested. So on the 13th of February 1961, Liongba was elected president of the republic and profited from the exclusion of his political adversaries or political rivals to put in place the presidential regime he really wanted to put. And this was through the adoption of a new constitution. On the 17th of February 1964, Gabonese military attempted a coup and Lumumba was arrested. But he was reinstituted by the French military, who intervened in the process. So 3 years after, on the 19th of March 1967, Lumumba, who was sick, was re-elected as President of the Republic and had as vice Albert Bena Bongo. Now we are talking of Bongo. Start marking the name from 1967. In fact, it was his first, Bongo was the vice president of Lumumba, and he even campaigned for Lumumba since Lumumba was very sick. But on the 28th of November 1967, after his presidential victory, Lumumba died in Paris, and his vice president, Albert Bena Bongo, now we're talking of the first Bongo, the first member of the Bongo family was president, succeeded Lumumba on the 2nd of December 1967 through the dictates of the constitution. So on the 12th of March 1968, Albert Bena Bongo therefore created a political party called Le Parti Démocratique Gabonais, PDG as it is abbreviated, which became the only political party at the time. Remember, after independence in most African, in most former colonies, multipartism was wiped out. In fact, one of the agreements in order to give African state independence was that they were going to stop multipartism and embark on a one-party system. And hence, that is the reason why most African countries, African countries that were former colonies of France, became a one-party system of the time, or at the time. So on the 25th of February 1973, through elections, Albert Bena Bongo, as the only candidate, was elected president with 99.6% of vote. This same year, he got converted into Islam and had his name changed from Albert Bernard to Omar. Hence, he became Omar Bongo. Gabon, being an oil-rich country, became a member of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, on the 10th of June 1975. And on the 30th of December 1979, other elections were held, and Omar Bongo was re-elected with 99.8% of vote, followed with the elections in November 1986, where he won with 99.97% of vote. In fact, he was the only candidate who stood for elections, since, as we earlier said, multipartism was banned. With the wind of change that took place in the 1990s after the collapse of the Berlin Wall and the shattering of the former USSR, on the 23rd of March 1990, there was a massive movement denouncing the totalitarian or the authoritarian government of Omar Bongo. And from there was a persistent request, just like in many French African states, including Cameroon, demanding for a national sovereign conference. The national sovereign conference took place in Gabon, and 2,000 delegates decided to restore multipartism. In fact, multipartism now took effect after 1990s. And the first multi-party elections with many presidential candidates or hopefuls took place in Gabon on the 5th of December 1993. Omar Bongo was again re-elected, and his victory led to massive violence and protests contesting his victory. Political leaders therefore met in Paris in 1994 under the supervision of France, and Omar Bongo was maintained in power, and through this, he won another elections in 1998. In fact, the constitution of this country limited presidential mandate after the Paris meeting. So on the 8th of June, but Omar Bongo did something very funny. In 2003, he suspended or cancelled the clause in the constitution that limited mandate because he wanted to stay president for life. But on the 8th of June 2009, this Omar Bongo, who ruled Gabon for 42 years, gave up the ghost in Barcelona in Spain. From his death, the constitution was respected, and the interim was assured by the president of the National Assembly at the time. It should be recalled that during his burial on the 16th of June 2009, his personal history was almost, or most of the time, confused with that of Gabon. In fact, this portrayed what the French political scientist Jean-François Médard calls neo-patrimonialism, Neo-patrimonialism is a system whereby some African leaders manage the state, manage the resources of African state as their personal belongings. In fact, neo-patrimonialism is a term borrowed from patrimonialism, which was first coined by the German sociologist Max Weber. So on the 30th of August 2009, the interim president organized another anticipated elections, and Ali Bongo won with 41.73%. Now we see that with the power of multipartism, people no more win with 99 or 96 or 98%. The victory now portray that a good percentage of the country did not want the Bongo family to continue power. But however, power was given to him, and it was highly contested. And some people held that the 2009 elections were given to Bongo because they wanted him to continue the work his father used to do for France. In fact, opening the resources of Gabon for France.
Thanks to Julius Awafong, our columnist from Cameroon. And we'll try to put the whole interview up on our site later on.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We've got to stop them. Kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution.
Your extra big ass fries.
You didn't give me no fries. I got an empty box.
Would you like another?
Extra big ass fries.
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford to make
a
purchase.
No, no.
I'm sorry you had
come
trouble.
Come on.
I'm
my kids
sorry
are starving.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence through self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer, long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So if food prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need, as humans, to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents and the offline home canning how to do everything website all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
What we do in life, it goes in eternity.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
President Barack Obama delivered a heartfelt and emotional speech outside the Pentagon on Sunday, September 11, in honor of the thousands of lives lost in the 9/11 attacks on 2001, addressing in a 10-minute oration those who lost loved ones 15 years ago. Obama said, "It is a great honor, once again, to be with you on this day, a day that I know is still difficult, but which reveals the love and faithfulness in your hearts and in the heart of our nation. We remember and we will never forget the nearly 3,000 beautiful lives taken from us so cruelly, including 184 men, women, and children here, the youngest just 3 years old," he continued. "We honor the courage of those who put themselves in harm's way to save people they never knew. We come together in prayer and in gratitude for the strength that has fortified us across these 15 years. And we renew the love and the faith that binds us together as one American family." With the American flag flying at half staff behind him, Obama offered sincere condolences to the families of those killed in the nation's deadliest terror attack. The cameras then turned to the chorus standing next to Obama on the stage with representatives of the Daughters of the American Revolution, the American Legion, the First Lutheran Church, Waco, Oklahoma City, the hoaxes of Sandy Hook, Boston, and San Bernardino, and also Orlando. The chorus then recited together in three-part harmony, "But the thing is, it's all a lie. Who knows why Obama lies? He lies. He lies. His whole presidential campaign was a lie. Hope and change. He promised not to prosecute members of the Bush administration for crimes such as 9/11 attacks, the illegal war on Iraq. He continues to torture, drone bomb, kill in Syria, Libya, etc. He lies. He lies. He lied to us, telling us Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. He lies. Who knows what plan he has that he is desperate to carry out? Maybe someone's forcing him. Maybe he has pressure on him. But he lies. He lies about Sandy Hook, about Boston, San Bernardino. He lies. Want the truth? The book. Nobody died at Sandy Hook. From moonrockbooks.com. What we need in America is a truth commission like they had in South Africa to heal their broken country. We need to put certain people on the stand, and we need to be allowed to ask questions, because our country is surely broken as well. The troops are not protecting us. That's someone's spin on the day's news, somebody's advertising slogan, someone else's sermon. The troops serve the empire. They're not heroes. They kill and plunder for the empire. American bases overseas serve nobody but the empire. The heroes in our country are the protesters, the ones who go face to face with the empire. Those in the plowshares movement, for one example. You have to know that Barack Obama knows the whole truth about the 9/11 attacks. He's complicit. He's lied. He's continued the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan based on a lie, and he knows he's lying. He lied right to our faces on national television when he said that Osama bin Laden had been killed and buried at sea. Osama bin Laden was buried at sea, and Jessica Lynch was rescued heroically. The USA does not torture. Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. George Bush won the 2000 election. See, there is a plane there in that hole in Shanksville. Went all the way into that hole. No, no, there's no blood, no bodies, no luggage scattered or plane parts. And Osama bin Laden was buried at sea.
Our next guest of the evening is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero is the founder and member of the Des Moines Catholic Worker in Des Moines, Iowa. He's also a former Catholic priest, and he spent many years in prison protesting against the U.S. military. Frank visited with Chuck earlier in the day, and we're going to listen to that right now.
Hey, Chuck.
Hello, Frank. How are you?
Are we going to do this live? You won't believe where I'm at.
Where are you?
Can you do it? Yeah, well, listen, I'm huffing and puffing. I just climbed up the hill. I'm bringing up some bedding. Because the last two nights, my girlfriend, she left me in the ditch in the tent that she got me living in, and she moved uphill on the land that we now have property to occupy, put her tent right, like within 50 yards of the work site, because
really?
We have permission of the pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline, the ugly, awful, oil, toxic, poisonous stuff coming out of North Dakota that the natives are putting down there, up there in North Dakota. We're trying to stop it from going under the Mississippi. And we had 44 folks arrested last Saturday. We're asking folks to come and encamp and get busted. Another major CD action this coming Saturday. Nonviolent training at 10. Direct action planning at noon. And then folks are going to occupy this place. If we don't have hundreds of people here in the next couple of weeks, it's a really sad moment. Can you hear those machines in the background?
No, I'm not hearing them. I just hear you.
Well, that's good, because I'm at sunset here. These things are still fully operating, and I'm fully visual. I can see this. We have security people here. I've just come up where Jess Resnicek had her tent for 3 days. It's called the MississippiStan.com. MississippiStan.com. That's the web page. Folks, get there if you can. The next 2 weeks, we want to save the state of Iowa and the Mississippi. This is the time to stop the pipeline. So physically, we got to have people interrupt their lives, join this kind of mass civil disobedience moment. We can get 300, 400, 500 people down here willing to get arrested for a couple $100 fine, do it nonviolently. We lead with our grandmothers. We've had 44 people arrested last week. We're going to build on that. We sure could use some help. How's that sound?
Well, that's quite something, Frank. So, there's still work going on. Nothing's been stopped yet, eh?
Well, the North Dakota, the natives have stopped their 20-mile, one-side breach for a while. The Obama administration has come in. And now our chance is to try to slow down the team that's eating up Iowa all across the state. And specifically, right now, it's burrowing under the Mississippi. We're going to put this crude, awful, ugly oil that's toxic and can burn when it's out in the air. I mean, it's so bad. Across underneath our Mississippi, these are the same people who have accident once or twice a year regularly. What are we talking about here? This is crazy, and it's only being done because the financiers of this pipeline, the one percenters, say that the IOU's in. You got to have it done. And they're slamming it down our throat. They got a Republican governor, three utility people. That's all it took to sign off on this thing. And people are really pissed in Iowa. And this is a moment to practice this kind of direct action. So, again, I'm making the plea from the site. I'm looking as I talk to you. These guys, all of them from outside the state, getting big bucks to borrow under the Mississippi. So this ugly crude oil from hell that's poisonous, toxic, not like anything we put in our cars, doesn't even stay in our country. It goes out of the country. Some one percenters in the oil world can keep making a profit. It's crazy. It's absolute crazy.
It is crazy, Frank. Where exactly are you? I mean, you said you're in Iowa and on the Mississippi, but where exactly?
3333 Rivers, Mississippi River Drive, either Keokuk or Sandusky or Montrose. I mean, it's right in between those places, in between Fort Madison and Keokuk. I mean, on the river, the Iowa side.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it sure sounds like quite something, and I hope maybe some of our listeners will come and join you.
MississippiStan.com.
Okay. MississippiStan.com.
Thank you. All right, friend.
Thank you, Frank.
God bless. Bye-bye. God bless. Bye-bye.
This message brought to you by the Foundation for a New American Dream. Did we go to the moon? Maybe, maybe not. But just like Voldemort and so many discussions that are prohibited in America, it is one that cannot be named. Was 9/11 an inside job? Stop. See? Like that. You can't talk about that. Was Paul Wellstone assassinated? A roll of the eyes. You are sent to Siberia by your brother, your mother, and your cousin, disapparated from the Thanksgiving dinner table. Poof. No one can now see you or talk to you. You are a non-person. Might as well go smoke in the garage. Did FDR provoke Pearl Harbor in order to get into WW2? Did the government burn men, women, and children alive at Waco? Was the government involved in the Oklahoma City bombing? Or so-called terror plots and mass murders, such as in Aurora, Colorado, and dozens of other terrorist events actually engineered by the FBI and CIA, NSA, in order to bring about a zeitgeist of fear and scare Americans into accepting a police state? What are chemtrails? What does the government know about UFOs? Why does Sirhan not remember anything about the RFK shooting? Who shot Martin Luther King? James Earl Ray said he didn't do it. Evidence says the FBI and others did it. Do those questions have merit, or are they preposterous? We will never know, because Brian Williams and NBC and Amy Goodman and NPR are afraid of even the question. Why? Did Bush steal the elections of 2000 and 2004? Ask these questions on any mainstream or so-called liberal website or TV show or newspaper or radio show, and you will get laughed down. Ask it on the so-called liberal progressive Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart. They will try to humiliate you. Why? Is it because you are truly so hilariously pathetic, or is it because they are so afraid? The Foundation for a New American Dream. Our next guest of the evening is Karen Kitkowski. Karen Kitkowski, PhD, is a retired United States Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, farmer, and aspiring anarcho-capitalist. She ran for Congress in Virginia's 6th District in 2012, and she was also stationed at the Pentagon on September 11th, 2001.
Hello?
Well, hello, Karen. It's Chuck and Mike of the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
All right. I guess I'll talk this week or this month about an article I wrote for Lou Rockwell, ran over the weekend, and once again about politics. And, you know, we've got these elections coming up for the president, whatever that means, and obviously, I've talked about Trump before, and while he's a, you know, crazy guy, I really he has the right enemies, and I think that counts for something. So, you know, I'm rooting for the guy. So I've got to be right up front with that. I like who his enemies are. His enemies are what I consider to be the enemies of freedom, liberty, this country, however you define this country. I think all those guys are lined up against him. And I think that's very telling. In fact, there was an article came out, I think, just a day or two ago, showing that all of the living former presidents of the United States have all said they're voting for Hillary Clinton, and not for Trump, not for the Libertarian, not for Jill Stein, or anything else. So that's pretty scary. I mean, when we think about what Hillary stands for, but it's also very, very telling. It's honest in a sense. I mean, we can say it's, you know, this is probably one of the few times a politician's lips are moving, and they were not lying. It's very honest for them to say that they embrace Hillary, because Hillary embraces them, and they aren't about a party. They are about a system, about the leadership. I hate to use the word leadership, but about the control of a state that has grown, because we're talking about the five living presidents, so since the 70s, we're talking about a state that has grown so massively that there is nothing that we do at any moment of the day or night that is not touched in some way by the state, this massive centralized bureaucracy with its regulations and its taxation and its mandates and its nannyism. And, you know, so and the state speaks for Hillary. The state supports Hillary. The past presidents, Republican and Democrat alike, all support Hillary, because really it's not about the party. It is about power and centralized power and maintaining that status quo power. So having said all that, you know, historically, if you read or listen to things that I've said, I'm rooting for Trump because his enemies are my enemies. Not necessarily a strong reason to root for a guy, but that's where I'm at. Now, having said all that, my article this weekend was in response to something I saw last week, and it was an announcement where James Woolsey, former CIA guy under Clinton and a big neoconservative, warmonger, critical player in the lies leading to the invasion of Iraq, occupation of Afghanistan, the whole Middle East. We got seven countries we're going to topple and implant our own favored governor in these Middle East countries. All seven. Syria was included, of course. And, oh, by the way, yeah, that's in the news. So Woolsey is this massive chicken hawk, meaning never served, doesn't have any family members that served. I don't count being appointed to the CIA as serving. And yet they're willing to take your kids, my kids, your grandkids, your nieces, your nephews, and send them over somewhere to die for no reason, except they wanted it to, and they had the power to do it. And so this is Woolsey, and Woolsey, the news was, of course, that Woolsey was named one of two security advisors for Donald Trump. Surprise, surprise. Now, we should have seen this coming when he chose Pence as his running mate. And my reading of Pence as his running mate, which was some months ago, was very much that he was doing that to get the evangelical vote in this country, which is important if you want to win in that party. So that made sense. But the other aspect of Pence, which should have told me this was coming with Woolsey and the neocons, was Pence's close and not so much close, but admiring relationship with some of the famous neocons like Dick Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, and these guys. So so either Pence is an idiot or he's a believer. Either one, he's dangerous. And we knew that. And vice presidents don't matter too much normally. Of course, you know, we could go in there on what could happen, and the vice president would then somehow matter. But in any case, Woolsey is announcing that he's, been appointed to Security Council for security advisor. And the word on the street, the word amongst the observers, is that he will be the director of national intelligence. Okay, well, this is absolutely the last thing you want to have done. And, of course, it's disappointing for someone who was rooting for Trump to have all the right enemies to then bring into the fold one of the major enemies. And so, you know, people had commented on my article basically saying this had happened. And they said, well, you know, Trump's smarter than that. He knows better. Okay, well, you know, you can play with fire and you do get burned. And the neocons are masters at maintaining and developing centralized government control, policy control, integrating that with intelligence and propaganda and information, perception management, all this they're very good at. They have companies that do this. They have think tanks that do this. They own, you know, they basically dominate media that does this. So, yeah, you can play with them and you can think you're going to manage it. But you know, we have to put a lot of trust that this is possibly true. So most likely it's not true. And most likely what it means, and this is my conclusion, is that the neocons know Trump's going to win and they're jumping on that ship like rats leaving the Hillary camp, where they were definitely welcomed, no doubt about it. Now realizing she doesn't have a chance, she's not going to be elected, and Trump is going to be elected, and they need to have, you know, basically maintain status quo, which was the whole reason all five presidents were supporting Hillary. They wanted to maintain the status quo. So there you have it. In a nutshell, the American political process, and you have to have your eyes wide open, and I don't understand how anyone could not be incredibly cynical about the whole thing. The government will continue to rape and pillage. This is the agenda, and this is what we are going to be getting after our next election, just like we've gotten after we elected the last five presidents and more. But let's just say the five that are living that endorsed Hillary, because that's a cute little group. Anyway, just wanted to share that. It's a little bit frustrating. You know, can you ignore politics and live your life and control your own arena, your own sphere of influence? Of course. And that's exactly what we should be doing. And ultimately, what will save this country is when people do turn their backs on the status quo, and they do it not just emotionally and maybe spiritually to a great extent, but also they do it economically. You know, we're seeing it already. People are earning less. They're leaving. They're taking more if there's more to be taken, but they're certainly not wanting to pay more in. You know, you can pay taxes. They say it's voluntary. You can write extra. How many people send in extra? Nobody does. You know, 35% of the GMP is enough. So anyway, things will change, but it won't be through the ballot. It will not be through the electoral process. Still very interesting election. Still a lot of fun. Still exciting. But the battle will continue. And anybody who thinks that no matter who they elect, even Jill Stein, although that would be nice, she might be enough of an outsider. But again, even if she was elected, does anyone really believe that the centralized state that controls every aspect of every person's life, not just in this country, but many people around the world, that it's really going to change because of, you know, one lying candidate over another lying candidate that the people pull the lever for? No, it is not going to change until we, the people, decide that we've had enough. And that has not happened. That is not happening, despite what we're seeing with the excitement amongst the Trump supporters. And I applaud them for their excitement. But really, you know, once again, cynicism reigns in my household anyway. So that's what I wanted to share with you.
Well, thank you, Karen. I think one thing we have to ask ourselves is if we can make that kind of a change.
Well, you know, I think I see government as, for the most part, a really massive parasite. It sucks and sucks, but it really doesn't try to kill the host, because obviously, you know, it needs the host alive. It weakens the host. We're the host. So, you know, how do you get rid of a parasite? Well, it takes some work. We could do it, but we don't ask the parasite to compromise with us. And to give us something else, it won't happen. We have to decide to shake it off.
Thank you, Karen. We'll look forward to hearing from you again next month.
Okay, super. Have a great evening.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Give me no fries. I got an empty box.
Would you like another?
Extra big ass fries.
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford to make
a
purchase.
Oh, no, no.
I'm sorry you had
come on.
Trouble.
My kids are starving.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence through self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer. Long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So if food prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or if you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need, as humans, to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents and the offline home canning how to do everything website all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
What we do in life echoes in eternity.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human beings!
Time! When the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right! You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution
Radio.
enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hello, Chuck. Hello, Mike. Good evening. Good evening.
And now, from Port Orange, Florida, with stops at World News Trust and Nation of Change and many other sites, here's Phil Ferrugio with It's the Umpire, Stupid.
Good evening, Working Stiffs. They want Kaepernick to go kaput. A 28-year-old man born of a single white 19-year-old woman, most likely Italian-American, and an Afro-American father, had a rough, to say the least, upbringing. Now that he is doing well financially and at the same time gaining in consciousness, Colin Kaepernick speaks up and speaks out. He, like many black, white, Latino, Asian, and other color Americans, sees the truth, and it hurts. Not perhaps as well read as many of we who study history through the prism of empire, Kaepernick has focused more on the injustices leveled out against people of color by the white law enforcement community. Okay, let's stop here for a breath. He himself was clear in his points that the majority of white and even black and Hispanic police officers are not out to gun down or harass people of color, especially unarmed ones. Too many videos of too many unarmed black men and women being gunned down is just too obscene to bear, period. So he protests the national anthem, and that is the gateway to our American exceptionalism mindset. Here's what Colin Kaepernick, if he was more well-read on our nation's history, should have been focusing on. An empire on steroids that celebrates militarism and phony wars. Ask yourself this. Why is it that before every sporting event, we not only have the national anthem, but we have honor guards and giant flags spread across the field of play? During World War II, our nation was at war, thus the constant reminders of our patriotism and national pride. Folks, they, meaning the masses of empire, wish to make you believe that we are now at war, but we are not. Even during those hysterical and fear-implanted days of the so-called Cold War, our media was used to propagandize this extreme patriotism. After all, as any baby boomer can attest to you, we kids spent many an afternoon in the 50s and 60s crouched between our desks or up against the hallway walls of our elementary and middle schools. Those A-bomb drills were forever upon us, as at any moment the Russians could attack. Now, if Mr. Kaepernick had experienced the above situations, perhaps he too would have included the empire in his protest. Two friends of mine at the simulcast center where we watch horse racing engaged me today on the Kaepernick protest. One fellow, a 90-year-old World War II veteran, and usually a mellow-as-can-be guy, was taken aback by my agreement with Kaepernick's protest. He actually said that Kaepernick should be executed for treason. Another friend, a 60-year-old guy, called Kaepernick every invective he could think of and wished that those San Diego players and fans really give it to him tonight at the preseason game. He called him a rich, full-of-shit phony who deserved to get released from football. Now, both guys told me how our troops deserve better treatment for all they are doing to protect our freedom. I told them I did not recall Kaepernick speaking of our troops, and I got pissed and I added, well, maybe it's more patriotic to protest a government that sends our troops to those Middle Eastern countries to kill and get killed where we don't freaking belong. Now, the masters of this empire will always work to polarize we working stiffs with fake rhetoric and shallow arguments. You know, like during the Vietnam phony so-called war, whenever we protested it, here came the same harangue. America, love it or leave it. Or, if you don't like it here, why don't you go and live in Russia? It's sad how during this whole debate on what Kaepernick is doing, never one word about how those myriad of unarmed people of color have been gunned down by police. Not one word. Thank you.
And during those 33 years, Jesus planted a doctrine with which without a doubt is revolutionary, without a doubt. One must read the real Jesus, not the Jesus of the oligarchy or the Jesus of the elite, the real Jesus. The one who was born there among the poor, who was a poor boy, who grew up among the poor, who stood up to the Roman imperialism of those times, who stood up to the religious elite of those times, who went around encouraging people to love one another. As long as you fight, nobody know how the fight going to come out. There's a possibility I might win, but I know if I stop, I cannot win. One man can make a difference if he's sincere. He was smiling, that's right, you know that, that Luke smile of his. He had it on his face right to the very end. Hell, if they don't know it for, they could tell right then he weren't going to beat him. That old Luke smile, old Luke, he was some boy, cool hand Luke. Hell, he's a natural born world shaker. Now, for your local Earth News, this is Chuck Gregory and Mike Polacek with a review of today's news from the Eye of the Hurricane and the Eye of the Blizzard by Ron Paul. Why are we giving $38 billion to rich and powerful Israel? Last week's announcement of a record-breaking U.S. aid package for Israel underscores how dangerously foolish and out of touch is our interventionist foreign policy. Over the next 10 years, the U.S. taxpayer will be forced to give Israel some $38 billion in military aid. It is money we cannot afford, going to a country that needs no assistance to maintain its status as the most powerful military in the Middle East. All U.S. foreign aid is immoral and counterproductive. As I have often said, it is money taken from poor people in the U.S. and sent to rich people overseas. That is because U.S. assistance money goes to foreign governments to hand out as they see fit. Often that assistance is stolen outright, or it goes to the politically connected in the recipient country. Just as bad is the fact that much of what we call foreign aid is actually welfare for the wealthy here at home. The aid package to Israel is a very good example. According to the agreement, this $38 billion will all go to U.S. weapons manufacturers, so the real beneficiaries are not the American people, not even Israeli citizens. The real beneficiaries are the U.S. military-industrial complex. Perhaps the money won't even leave Washington. It may simply go across town from the Fed to the Beltway bomb makers. Find the rest of the article at Information Clearinghouse, Why Are We Giving $38 Billion to Rich and Powerful Israel? By Ron Paul.
The Green Party may try to escort candidate Jill Stein into the presidential debates in an attempt to get her on stage, a campaign advisor announced on Wednesday. It's undemocratic to exclude me and Gary Johnson from presidential debates, Stein says. Stein's campaign is organizing a protest outside Hofstra University, where the debate between the Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton and the Republican nominee Donald Trump will take place on Monday, September 26. Stein, her vice presidential candidate Ajamu Baraka,
and 100 of her supporters are willing to risk arrest at the debates, the first of which will be held at New York's Hofstra University on Monday. The Commission on Presidential Debates announced on Friday that the third-party candidate Stein and Libertarian Gary Johnson had failed to qualify for the first debate. An invitation on Stein's website offers participants the opportunity to enroll in a one-day nonviolent civil resistance training ahead of Monday's protest. The debate over the debate escalated in recent weeks as it has become clear that the two alternative candidates would likely not have a podium on the debate stage despite the record low favorability ratings of the major party nominees. We can't have democracy without a free exchange of ideas and an informed public, Stein says. The presidential debates, watched by roughly 70 million people, are the most important way for voters to get information.
Upcoming Jill Stein events, Friday, September 23, 1 p.m., Rhode Island College in Providence. Wednesday, September 28, University of South Florida, Tampa. For information about how to join the protests at Hofstra University on Monday, go to Jill Stein, the Jill Stein website, events, jill2016.com. That's all, folks. That's the news, and we are out of here. Good night and good luck, and so it goes. That's the way it is. Stay on the same page. Step up to the plate. Good to go. Take it to the next level. At the end of the day, bring something to the table. Have a good day. It is what it is. It's time to wake up. Your toast is ready. The bus is here. The world is on fire. Our next guest of the evening is Michael Annis. Michael Annis is executive editor of Howling Dog Press in Denver. Michael is an activist, a poet. And Chuck will be getting Michael on the line right about now.
Hello.
Well, hello, Michael. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Hi, Chuck. Hi, Mike. It's good to be back on the New American Dream. Tonight I'll be reading the first half of a digressive chapter from Brave New World Order, simply titled American Scumbags. Fully acknowledging that the creature known as the scumbag bores into the general populace of every nation in the world, tonight's piece should be taken as a tribute to those who would take a stand against the predator and pariah, the American scumbag. I'll begin by quoting from Weapons of Mass Deception, a lengthy poem that I wrote a decade ago that was included in Cost of Freedom, the anthology published through Howling Dog Press in 2007, and edited by Mike Palachek, Whitney Tretien, and myself. American Scumbags, Part 1. Our weapons of mass deception ensure that those least able to defend themselves are the first victimized. Our weapons of mass deception, sipping martinis in private jets, discuss all men's yearning for democracy, intent on creating foul freedom as democracy imposed on populations of goat herders whose rocky fields blanket uranium deposits and lakes of oil, on rice farmers whose paddies harbor tin and rubber, that one day they may yearn for Walmart like the rest of the civilized world, sipping martinis in private jets circling the globe as wardens of the Brave New World Order prison, pinpointing squatters who would not lust for McDonald's, rousting them out of their lairs and spider holes, confiscating those hovels as new locales for shopping malls, missile sites, skyscrapers, liquor stores, country clubs, and concentration camps upon the sacred altar of 21st century corporate capitalist civilization, the phallic tower of our weapons of mass predation, all alienated as one in a storm of bullets, sewn together at the skull by simulacrum, joined together at the lips by histrionics, erected and constructed of the dead bodies of castrated children, immolated like obedient swine, the genome of six continents. American Scumbags, Part 1. Wall Street jackals murder their prey under artificial moons, heralding the flooding wake of scumbag-ruled anti-culture in which all life forms drown. Truth is crushed under the juggernautical treads of scumbag corporations as their goondroids mop up the bloodbaths of a conquered third world. In the third world of the myth of America, divine oligarchs first stole indigenous lands, then Indian souls by imprisoning them in bottles of cheap whiskey on reservations. Inspired by the success of their progenitors, rogue offspring steal all that remains through others' enslavement to corporate nihilism. Scumbag progeny exterminate the Earth's remaining species to breed soulless machines that are described in terms of horsepower or rams or jaguars or Cherokees or redskins. Thievery of native lands did not suffice. Scumbags confiscated the psyche of the rightful inhabitants of the primeval, attaching their nomenclature as chromed ornaments to gasaholic machines that further desecrate and destroy the land that was pillaged and debauched, or affixing them to helmets of overpaid uniformed gladiators, thus heroized to future generations of illicit occupiers. The ensuing psychic alienation and rampant identity crises do not trouble the scumbag, for his cash is flowing, his community gated, his golf course artificially greened. What is an American scumbag? Occam's razor might respond in quotes, a human cannibal whose predatory beliefs, instincts, dealings, actions, and way of life exploit, damage, embarrass, cripple, or otherwise wreak havoc on the world's people or the biosphere of the planet, end quotes. From the moment Columbus first set foot upon the New World onward, history records a steady series of underhanded, greedy, self-glorifying actions and self-serving policies fomented by a small group of megalomaniacs who have commandeered the political, economic, and religious principles of America. By fraud, theft, slavery, bondage, and the instilling of terror through political and religious thuggery, they've climbed the ladder of capitalist propaganda, romping upon the bodies of the disinherited poor and middle class to educate generations in the philosophical premises that ultimately serve to state that all the Earth's treasure is rightfully theirs. From the docking of the Mayflower to the launching of the space shuttle, the scumbags have cheated, buggered, murdered, raped, conned, pillaged, made war upon, lied, usurped, harangued, and savaged their way to infamy. These oligarchic pirates, human and non-human, creating themselves as the quintessential image of the great American hero, Moloch, the god of money, war, and power, devourer of children, divine king of infanticide, have had their scumbag deeds revised in history books by coercing the national memory with economic bribery or through economic censorship, and have purchased the writing of laws that conceal and defend their heinous activities. These oligarchs eviscerate the will, the autonomy of the people for their own selfish plunder. The poor man is not preying upon the rich man. The disinherited are not night stalkers roaming the gardens of the wealthy who continue to usurp, plunder, loot, and rob, imprisoning the poor for crimes committed by the rich. This thin red line of scoundrels ensures that all the wealth of the planet trickles down through their economic lineage, while the remaining 99% of humankind reels in despair, disease-ridden, health-shattered, and as Monsanto Corporation's malignant monopolistic menace devours natural species, starves to death, for that which is eaten will not nourish. Who are the pious religious scumbags that ramrodded the brutal Salem witchcraft hunts and trials? What scumbags swindled the Indians out of their lands and sent them careening down the heartless, tragic trail of tears? Who slaughtered the buffalo into near extinction, leaving their carcasses to rot while selling off their pelts? What scumbags behind the desks ordered the slaughter of unarmed Native Americans at Wounded Knee and the Ghost Dance? Who made deals with the Nazis to supply the equipment necessary to facilitate the human meltdown that was the Holocaust, the kindling of Jewish children, faces bubbling, searing, scumbag prophets soaring from the chimneys? Who called in the armed forces to beat, bludgeon, and kill American workers striking for bread and wages? What scumbags cheated and shot down the itinerant workers picking lettuce in the fields for pennies? Who lynched and set fire to the niggers in the name of Christ, riding cowardly these hyenas in packs, faces concealed from the light of their torches by white hoods? Buggerers, Betrayers of humanity in the maelstrom of psychic convergence sold down the river, where parabolic curves exterminate human lives for a few cents on the dollar. Politicians, lobbyists, oil barons, insurance goons, pharmaceutical tycoons, scumbag reapers of corporate campaign bribes, shipping jobs overseas, eliminating tariffs, chew off the benefits of those who have been disabled from breaking their backs in company hellholes. My Lai, Desert Storm, the Patriot Act, Shock, Awe, Fallujah, the atrocities of Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo, all brought to us by scumbags, buried under tons of scumbag media fluff. The scumbag, operating under the ethos of privilege and sensing that he might be called upon for civic duty, wherein his vast fortunes could be slightly whittled, forcefully squeezes crocodile tears from his eyes and offers, reluctantly, we must slash funds for education, assistance to the poor, disabled and elderly, food stamps, welfare, Social Security, and all social programs. Times are dire for all of us. There is nowhere else to turn, nowhere else that can be taxed or levied. Union greed strangles us, but together we can stop the bleeding. We cannot save the world, but we can save our state. We can save our children. Under glaring TV studio lights, the scumbag reads aloud from the Book of Job. He pauses in deep contemplation, then holds the Bible head high, solemnly shaking it alongside his shining coiffure, gazing deeply into the camera. Fiery righteousness streams from his eyes, and in a fatherly tone, he admonishes, right now, the Lord is telling me that there are a thousand of his children out there, right now, on the other side of this camera, 1,000 of his faithful, who must give $1,000 each for the work of the Lord, that his prophecies may continue to flow from the mouth of his anointed servant. The Lord calls upon you to spare you. Perhaps you have saved up $1,000 for a rainy day, a tragedy. Well, thus saith the Lord, do not test me, my child, for I, the Lord, am your provider. Thou art saving up fleeting funds that shall surely be eaten away by rust and moths. Do not test me, for it is I, the Lord your God, who provideth and taketh away. Do not steal from me $1,000 when my servant gives forth my warning. For it is better to send my prophet the wages that are due him right now than for your soul to burn in hell for eternity. Idol worship is not without consequence, is not a liberating force of fantasy through which one ascertains truth and humanity. Contextualized within a mythological civilization, the adulation of mythologized human creatures greater than oneself is not cheap. The price is high not only in dollars and cents, but in human and non-human lives and subservience to propaganda fomented to inculcate reverence for inhumane acts and the terrorizing of public conscience. The corrupted morale of the corrupted dream is that there is nothing immoral in the quest of obtaining riches. Yet that which is inhumane is portrayed as that to which society should aspire under the false pretenses of the humane, peering out from behind the mask of human brotherhood. Revisionist history creates pseudo-gods, larger than life, self-made icons, arisen to autonomy, who were not required to answer to anyone, their mythologies transcending the ugly repercussions of their deeds. Aristocrats above accountability, who dismiss the immorality of their crimes and subjugate the morality of their times to justifiably command wealth, power, and personal objectives they consider due them, becoming a pariah on all that is civil and designed to enrich the common good. The great myth of America drapes like a funerary shroud around her Constitution, a Constitution pillaged, raped by financial brigands, reverential sharks, lying, bribing thieves who nest in the halls of Congress, and partisan justices in the highest court, whose brazen audacity determines corporate entities have rights superior not only to humans, but all life. The presidency has become an office of shame, bullied by lobbyists, commandeered by profiteers, occupied by barely literate dumbbells and eloquent cowards. For 10 years, the separation of church and state has been floating belly up in a toxic baptismal swamp of right-wing evangelicals who won't rest until ties to their brand of religion are as automatically and universally collected as federal income tax.
Michael.
Yes.
Very good. Hey, I just have a minute here, and you're using the weapon of poetry to fight the empire, like a concealed carry in America. But it's important that this thing goes on no matter what. I assume you agree. You know, I wonder if the Beats, Kerouac, were up against the same thing, or are we in uncharted territory here in America these days?
You know what? I knew some of the Beats. I didn't know them all. Kerouac was gone by the time I came around. I mean, he was dead. He'd essentially given up and became an alcoholic and lived with his mother and just kind of, trashed.
Mike, thanks. Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
The necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation. Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records, addresses, phone numbers? We'll squeeze on over to freedomslips.com. Yes, that's www.freedomslips.com. Click the banner on the homepage for the EMP-proof bullet drive to get the full scoop of everything that we offer. So, folks, keep your data safe for your peace of mind. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. Opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hello, this is Andy Rooney reporting for the new Nightly News. I'm Andy Rooney, and you're not, just saying. Well, I get a chance here to talk about the new American dream, and I'm going to go for it. The kind of people we have running our government, if we really knew the truth, I believe we would be astonished. Forget about George Washington and the cherry tree, Ronald Reagan making America strong again, the George Bushes riding into the baseball game on national TV to throw out the first ball, then sitting in the front row. Forget about Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, the new liberal Democrats who care about you. SpongeBob, The Simpsons, and South Park, Calvin and Hobbes, Snoopy have more to tell us than those guys. If you really want to be a true American, you need to know what the CIA has done in other countries, supposedly in our names, and make sure to read your William Bloom. You need to know what happened to Gary Webb after he wrote a story about CIA drug running in Los Angeles, a story that ran in the San Jose Mercury News when the web was first getting going in the early 90s. I remember reading that when we first got America Online, and I thought, wow, here we go. This is going to be a ride. And then that was it. Now the main media is worse than an underground junior high newsletter. There is more than enough reason to wonder if we really went to the moon and that the government has been withholding information about UFOs. At least in the Soviet Union, when they saw nonsense and lies prisoned in Pravdintas, at least they knew they were lies. We are still in the infancy stage in our development of not questioning the lies. And by the way, Bigfoot is real, I guarantee it. Bigfoot is real, and each of the millions of high school history books in the bottom of millions of hall lockers are make-believe. That is really where we are. That is really who we are. And so the next time there is a bombing or a threat of a bombing or a bunch of blue backpacks found on a black bench in Bemidji, the healthy American, the true American, the real American thinks CIA, FBI, the police. The real patriot refuses to stand for the national anthem, and rather than another knee-jerk reciting of the pledges of allegiance, he says, not until I get some questions answered, because this is important stuff. The anthrax letters, remember those? Wow, what a time. Let's read the anthrax letters. This is next. Take penicillin now. Death to America. Death to Israel. Allah is great. You cannot stop us. We have this anthrax. You die now. Are you afraid? Death to America. Death to Israel. Allah is great. These were written and sent not by folks in a cave with a pen made from musk oxen tail, but by U.S. government agents with advanced degrees from American universities paid for by our tax dollars that we earned by getting up at 7 a.m. every Monday morning to deliver newspapers. Seriously, that is our world. Sorry, but I'm just saying they want us to be afraid. We cannot be afraid. There is actually a they out there, and there is actually a you and a me and a we. They, Bush, Obama, Clinton and company, want us to be afraid. We can do this. We are not afraid. This has been Andy Rooney reporting for the New Nightly News. I'm Andy Rooney, and you're not. Just saying.
Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. There's not one person in America, nobody, who knows what's going on with their history, with their current news, and that is obviously by design. So, in order to understand, the town of Moon Rock Lake, possibly the first municipality in the United States to do this, and we're hoping we get some kind of recognition, maybe an award or a free trip to Orlando. Town has undertaken a special tax on Fig Newtons, donut holes, baklava, cinnamon rolls, and bear claws to pay for the services of Swami L. Bill Murray L. Rama Lama Ding Dong. This is the Swami's first report, which was given in person at 9 o'clock coffee this morning from the window table at the Bluebird Diner on 2nd Street. The Swami. Another terrorist attack in a major American city. More frightening images and talk of pressure cookers and ball bearings, BBs and pipe bombs, lone wolves and Christmas tree lights. The latest alleged perpetrator is Ahmad Khan Rahami, a young Muslim man who grew up in America and likes to like souped-up cars. He became self-radicalized watching videos on the internet that inspired him to blow up innocent Americans. He traveled to Afghanistan or Pakistan or both and in the years prior to the attack. Nobody seems to know what he did there, but authorities are pretty sure there's no wider conspiracy. Cornered and desperate after authorities released his picture to the public, it's a small miracle the suspect is still alive after a wild shootout with police. Sound familiar? As with Tamerlan Tsarnaev, another recent lone wolf who suddenly started acting as a cartoonish Muslim fanatic, the FBI and CIA can be found lurking in the backstory. On Saturday, September 17th, the U.S. military, combined with Reaper drones from the British RAF and Australian and Danish forces, attacked Syrian forces who were engaged in combat against our supposed enemy ISIS, just out of Deir ez-Zor, Syria. 62 Syrian troops were killed and another 100 were wounded. When the attack stopped due to Russia demanding the U.S. and coalition forces cease the attack, ISIS then moved into the area and took it from the Syrians. The United States, Britain, Australian, and Danish forces did not then target ISIS after the mistake, but rather they simply let them advance on the position cleared out by the coalition forces. This event ended the ceasefire agreement for all intents and purposes, could easily be considered an act of war against the Syrian state, which we've been trying to destabilize for the past 5 years, and threatened to expose the true nature of our war on ISIS. Given the sheer magnitude of this event, it is understandable that those who planned it would wish to make sure that the MSM and the general population had something else to discuss all weekend, and for the first part of the week, while the well-coordinated attack on Syrian troops by coalition forces in support of ISIS slipped quietly down the memory hole as if it never happened. In short, they needed a distraction, and a big one. Part of irregular warfare is waging psychological operations in support of military campaigns. Creating distractions from failed or potentially unpopular operations falls under that general description. The regime change operation in Syria and the larger endless war everywhere against ISIS could easily be lost if the rightness of our cause comes into question in the minds of the masses, which is exactly what prolonged discussion and debate of this planned attack could have produced. But that won't happen now. That won't happen because Ahmad Khan Rahami, for no apparent reason, decided to make a bunch of bombs and target random spots across New Jersey and New York. The big event in the weekend of distraction terrorism occurred around 8:30 p.m. Saturday night. That's about an hour after an emergency session of the United Nations Security Council was called to address the coalition attack on Syrian troops. An act of war were it to have been done by anyone else, mind you. At that time, a device went off in Chelsea, an affluent, quiet section of Manhattan. Why would Ahmad Khan Rahami pick Chelsea in the first place? And after doing so, for some unknown reason, why would this terrorist drop his bomb in a huge metal dumpster, ensuring it would be loud but much, much less lethal? That's just dumb. There were explosions, blood, victims, everything corporate media news feeds on. And it was served up right on time with just enough of all of those things to do its job without killing anyone. That's if you care to wonder about motive anymore. After James Holmes, Adam Lanza, the Sarnia brothers, Syed Rizwan Farooq, and his wife Tashfeen Malik or Omar Mateen, folks may have given up on expecting to find a motive in such events these days. Me, I'm old school. I know there's always a motive somewhere, if you care to look. Notice the bomb contains a nifty little handwritten note right there with it. It mentions other bombers and terrorists in the past, as do many of the manifestos and both side scribble confessions of years gone by. Funny, though, isn't it, that a terrorist would include a handwritten note in a bag that he expected to blow up? I guess it's a really good thing that it didn't blow up, and the bomb squad didn't blow it up either.
according to officials. They have a video of two well-dressed men going up to the bag Rahami supposedly left on 27th Street and taking the bag down the street a bit, opening it, taking out the plastic white bag with the bomb in it, taking the bomb out of the bag, leaving it on the sidewalk where the woman found it, and then they took off with the wheeled bag. These two young military-age guys have disappeared into the woodwork of this story, just like that other guy at the Aurora Century 16 mass casualty event disappeared. Just like that guy they arrested out in the woods behind Sandy Hook Elementary disappeared. Just like the three hobos did on November 22nd, 1963 in Dallas. Poof! They're gone. You would think the authorities would be fairly interested in locating them, since they seem to have been walking back and forth on that street as if they were waiting for something. You would think the authorities would wonder why two well-off dudes would want some bum's beat-up luggage. You would think the authorities might consider it a little suspect that they opened the bag, found a bomb in it, and rather than leave it alone and call authorities, they simply took it out of the bag and dumped it on the sidewalk and made off with the bag, which I have to expect would be considered key evidence. I wonder how two trendy guys in Chelsea get familiar enough with pressure cooker bombs to handle and perhaps even disable them. Curious, eh? In the end, the two fashionable bomb-handling military-age thieves aside, in the end, all that was left behind was the white bag, the disabled bomb, and the awfully convenient handwritten note and a fingerprint. Just enough to lead authorities right to our patsy suspect, Ahmad Khan Rahami. In terms of Rahami's potential motive for this, I don't know of one. In terms of this being potentially a key part of what appears to be a rather contrived hearts and minds psyop, well, yeah. In keeping with the two mysterious guys theme, on Sunday night, five more bombs were found in Elizabeth, New Jersey. They were sitting on a trash can in a backpack, and the bums decided they wanted said backpack with the potential goodies inside. So, according to the story, they picked up said backpack and made a break for it, but the backpack was too heavy for them. So, less than a block away, they put it on the ground, opened it up, found pipe bombs, spread said pipe bombs on the street right there, and left and notified authorities. I've yet to see any videos of Ahmad Khan Rahami walking around in either location in Jersey. The two guys' similarities in the stories from the found explosives is hard to miss, and I think it's a key element in understanding what this series of events really was. When handling any form of explosives, my guess is two is definitely company. Were something to go wrong, the second guy can administer first aid or simply scrub away as much evidence as possible before making a break for it. Also, might be a good idea to have two guys in case some real bums show up and decide they want to fight for the abandoned backpack and bum luggage. Who knows? Maybe it's standard operating procedure to have two operatives handle explosives. Maybe it's a rule in their union. Whatever the case may be, having both of the undetonated ordnances discovered and then placed by two guys in both circumstances is probably not a coincidence. Seems to me to be a pattern. In every case you investigate, you look for patterns that stand out, and this is definitely one of them. No one has really explained at all why Ahmad Khan Rahami would leave a bag full of pipe bombs with no detonator on them on a trash can on the street. It doesn't make sense. They couldn't go off on their own, and leaving them there like that absolutely ensured that they would be found and eventually used as evidence against him. It's ridiculous. If he didn't want to carry them, he could have tossed them in the river or buried them in the woods. Leaving them there makes no sense. Again, I have yet to see any video of him leaving this bag on the busy business-oriented block where they were found. Surely more than one of those businesses has security cameras? Again, if anyone has seen such a video, please let me know. And when you think of this in terms of a psyop, it makes perfect sense that they would be left there to be found, and it makes even more sense that you would have your guys find them. After all, we're talking about working explosive ordnances. Very dangerous stuff to be leaving lying around, so making sure you control the devices from cradle to grave is part of the operation. Hence, the two fashionable Chelsea guys with really bad taste in luggage and the two bums who are too lazy to carry their stolen loot more than a block down the road. Again, one way this part of the story makes sense, the other way, it doesn't. You figure out which is which. Here's the trouble they may have faced. How to distract Americans from that coalition attack on Syrian troops while not piling up a bunch of dead bodies. I think the solution they came up with, though it is still terrorism technically, was to come up with a kinder, gentler terrorism. One that distracted the public and pushed the ISIS narrative. At the time of writing this, Ahmad Khan Rahami is being reported as not cooperating with the investigation, which means he hasn't confessed as of yet. Folks like Trump and Lindsey Graham are saying he should be treated as an enemy combatant, tortured, deprived of his constitutional rights as a U.S. citizen, in other words. For those of you who still think Trump represents any real change, I suggest you go back and research Barack Obama 2007. That should clear things up a little. At this point, some 5 days after the event, it's pretty clear to me what this was, and I feel there are some pretty convincing pieces of evidence that prove it. And most compelling of all of them is the way the kinder, gentler terrorism of this past weekend was carried out in a kinder and gentler fashion. Ahmad Khan Rahami is not a bumbling mastermind who sleeps in doorways while trying to escape. At this point, I don't know what he is. Patsy stooge or complicit stooge? But I can tell you this. This was a hearts and minds campaign, not a very well disguised one at that. Perhaps it was hastily cobbled together. Perhaps they simply don't feel the need to put that much effort into these things anymore, since the MSM is clearly unwilling to turn over even the most obvious and blood-soaked rocks in what they call their journalistic investigations. Whatever the case may be, they got what they wanted. The Obama act of war against Syria is lost down the memory hole, kind of like those two well-dressed thieves in Chelsea with really bad taste in carry-on luggage. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. The new American dream means never having to say some question or idea is not valid. We're allowed to ask any questions we have. There are no wrong questions. There is no hidden black military budget. There are no UFO files Americans cannot see. No JFK documents that will not be opened during our lifetimes. No destroyed RFK murder photos by the LA police. No evidence from Ground Zero taken away before we can even look at it. We are not the USSR of the 1960s. This is supposed to be America. That's our dream, to become America, the new America, the real hope of the world. We have a dream of bringing the United States politicians, journalists, and generals who brought about this long 12-year war and debacle to trial and put on TV, just like OJ, every afternoon, so every American can watch, just like the McCarthy hearings, the JFK funeral procession. What we need is a new American dream, not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. Right now, we live on lies. We subsist on lies, but it's not really living. 9/11 was an inside job. Bush, Cheney, Rice, Powell, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, Obama, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, they all know it. What we need in America is a truth commission like they had in South Africa to hero their broken country. We need to put certain people on the stand. We need to be allowed to ask questions because our country is surely broken as well. The troops are not protecting us. That's someone's spin on the day's news, somebody's advertising slogan, someone else's sermon. The troops serve the empire. They are not heroes. They kill and plunder for the empire. American bases overseas serve nobody but the empire. The heroes in our country are the protesters, the ones who go face to face with the empire. Those in the plowshares movement, for one example. You have to know, Barack Obama knows the whole truth about 9/11 attacks. He's complicit. He's lied. He's continued the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan based on a lie, and he knows he's lying. He lied right to our faces on national television when he said Osama bin Laden had been killed and buried at sea. Osama bin Laden buried at sea. Jessica Lynch rescued heroically. The USA does not torture. Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. George Bush won the 2000 election. See, there's a plane there in that hole, and Shanksville went all the way into that hole. And no, there's no blood, no bodies, no luggage scattered or plane parts. And Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. As we approach the end of another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show, we'd like to thank you all for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
And thanks to our guests, Julius, Frank, Phil, Karen, Michael. Show archives are available at newdream.us. And as always, we apologize for our mistakes and are planning right now to make fewer mistakes next week. If you would like to send a donation to the Des Moines Catholic Worker or get on the mailing list for their newspaper, Via Pacis, write to Phil Berrigan, Catholic Worker House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. For additional information on Michael Annis, go to howlingdogpress.com. To find Karen Kitkowski, go to lourockwell.com. You can find Julius Awafong on Facebook. Find Phil Ferruggio in this month's edition of Cold Type magazine, coldtype.net. And so good night to my friends Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawksprung. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries, it isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
listening to Revolution Radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human beings!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener support.